the church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The sixth century. The 12th century.
O come, O come, Emmanuel.
The 16th century.
Lord, keep us steadfast in your word. Help us to rightly see us.
The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
It's always a little bit creepy whenever a large conglomerate of a bunch of big Fortune 500 companies come together and start to dictate bathroom policies.
More and more, God's word is showing up less and less in evangelical preaching.
Every person is going to see something wrong with their pastor. Now, why has the Lord let you see that wrong thing about your pastor? The answer is so that you can pray for them.
Every sin is a form of unbelief, where we do not believe that God's going to take care of us like he takes care of the birds in the air and the flowers in the field.
This is Chaplain Colonel Philip Hauser calling to say that all Christian patriots love doing push-ups while listening to Issues, etc. Carry on.
I think everyone who cares about life and preserving life in the womb wants to see this happen. Now, not everyone who says they care about life and life in the womb wants to see this happen. That is evident in our politics today. What is that? What? It is the defunding of Planned Parenthood. $500 million? $500 million of taxpayer money goes every year to Planned Parenthood. And, you know, there are some political tasks that are possible. There are some political tasks that are probable. I'm beginning to wonder whether it will be politically possible, at least for now, to defund Planned Parenthood, even with a Republican president, with a Republican House, and a Republican Senate. It's working its way through reconciliation in the Senate, and we're going to get an update on the Senate health care bill and defunding Planned Parenthood. Alexander DeSantis will join us here in the first few minutes of Issues, Etc. Greetings and welcome. We're coming to you live on this Monday afternoon, July the 24th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. After our conversation with Alexander DeSantis, Dr. John Kleinig joins us for part two of our series on the book of Hebrews. Then we're going to be spending some time with Ken Samples of Reasons to Believe, a recent New York Times story in the Sunday Review. The headline reads, "Don't Believe in God? Maybe you'll try UFOs." The less likely you are to be involved in any kind of religion or have a religious affiliation, the more likely you are to believe and be involved in the paranormal. What is that all about? We'll answer that question with Ken Samples in the last half hour of the program. Joining us for an update on the Senate health care bill and defunding Planned Parenthood, Alexandra DeSantis. She's William F. Buckley Fellow in Political Journalism for the National Review Institute, author of a recent column for National Review Online titled "Senate Health Care Bill Won't Defund Planned Parenthood." Alexandra, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Hi, Todd. Great to be with you.
Give us a brief history of this effort, and as of this afternoon, where do we stand legislatively on defunding Planned Parenthood?
Well, things in general are pretty up in the air right now with the health care bill. It's unclear exactly what bill the Senate will even be voting on this week. Senate leadership insists that they will be voting on a bill, but there are a couple of different versions that they could be considering. Both of those versions would defund Planned Parenthood, but just last week, on Friday, the Senate parliamentarian determined, at least according to her reading of the Senate rules, that defunding Planned Parenthood violates the Byrd rule. So in other words, in order to pass that particular clause of the bill, the Senate would need 60 votes rather than, you know, the 51 required to pass the bill as a whole. If that ruling is, I guess, respected by the Senate, then it's unlikely that they'll be able to defund Planned Parenthood.
So are we clear on how this Byrd rule works that raises this from a simple majority to a 60-vote majority?
You know, the general concept of the rule is that only things that have to do directly with the federal budget can be passed in a reconciliation bill. So the Republicans are trying to pass health care repeal and replace using reconciliation. And what that means is they need only the simple majority rather than the 60 votes. But that also means that there's a much stricter standard that everything in the bill has to meet. And supposedly that's things having to do with the federal budget. And I guess that can be a little bit nuanced. And that's why you have somebody like the Senate parliamentarian who sort of rules on what exactly meets the standard and what doesn't. And apparently, according to her reading, you know, I haven't been able to see any detailed explanation from her, if one's out there at all. But according to her reading, defunding Planned Parenthood does not meet that standard.
So could this come down to success or failure in terms of defunding Planned Parenthood via this particular mechanism? Could it come down to simply the decision of the parliamentarian when it's final?
You know, it's hard to say right now because there's some history of, you know, provisions, the language of certain provisions being changed such that the parliamentarian changes his mind. In the past, it's always been a man changes his mind. There's also, you know, the possibility that, you know, they could present sort of a different argument to her as to why this actually does meet the Byrd Rule standards. And perhaps she'd be convinced. You know, right now we don't really know what her full reasoning was. We just have that's her decision. And so, you know, I've been told by people in the Senate that there's some possibility of wiggle room there still.
This is a Senate rule, and someone might ask kind of naively, look, don't Republicans at least narrowly control the Senate? Can't the Senate change its own rules? What's your answer to that question?
I mean, yes, the answer is always, yes, you can change the rules, but then the question becomes, do you want that rule changed someday in the future when you're in the minority? You know, so you could just totally get rid of the Byrd Rule, I guess, or even some are saying you could get rid of the filibuster altogether and have everything passed by a simple majority. But then I guess the counter argument to that would be, well, what do we really want to alter the entire structure of the Senate to get what we want this one time?
Is there any prospect, let's say, that the parliamentarian sticks with this recommendation, says, look, we really need to enact the Byrd Rule here? Is there any prospect of its passage then with defunding Planned Parenthood intact?
You know, I mean, at this point, it's much more complicated of a question than just whether we're defunding Planned Parenthood or not. I think it's pretty questionable whether the bill itself could even pass, regardless of whether or not it's defunding.
Is there any prospect, let's say, that the parliamentarian sticks with this recommendation, says, look, we really need to enact the Byrd Rule here? Is there any prospect of its passage then with defunding Planned Parenthood intact?
You know, I mean, at this point, it's much more complicated of a question than just whether we're defunding Planned Parenthood or not. I think it's pretty questionable whether the bill itself could even pass, regardless of whether or not it's defunding Planned Parenthood, just given the very slim margin in the Senate and all the different disagreements that exist, even among just Republicans. I think if it's possible to pass the bill at all, there's a slight chance that they could manage to defund Planned Parenthood if they could sort of word that clause in a way that works for the Senate parliamentarian.
The reconciliation process between the two houses is, as you say, really complicated, and you practically have to be, you know, a lifelong senator to understand how these things really work. But let's say, for the sake of argument, that they were able to come up with a bill in reconciliation. Does it then have to go back to the House of Representatives for their approval yet again before it can move to the president's desk?
You know, I believe that it would, because the House passed a separate bill, and this is a new bill that Senate leadership has written and that they're dealing with now. I know there's a slight chance that they might try to vote on the 2015 Obamacare repeal bill, which would be a totally different story altogether. But I think in any event, they would have to work with the House after whatever they come up with.
What did the House push toward the Senate in the first place? How did it look vis-a-vis the issue of defunding Planned Parenthood?
I believe that the House bill also defunded Planned Parenthood with similar language to the Senate bill.
It's just strategically, kind of to pick your brain a little bit, Alexandra, this is an attempt to do several things at once. Already controversial is repeal and replace, all by itself, laying aside the issue of abortion. Is it wise necessarily to try and do these two things, both to repeal and replace a controversial law and to do something as really kind of staggeringly controversial for some as defunding Planned Parenthood at the same time?
You know, that's a great question. I think just purely strategically speaking or politically speaking, I guess it's not that great of an idea to try and force these two bitter pills down Democrats' throats at once. But I think they did do that for a very good tactical reason, and that is they knew that if they were to pass just a straight defunding of Planned Parenthood bill, that would never meet the reconciliation rules. It would require 60 votes, and there's just no way they would ever get 60 votes on a bill that's a straight defund. And so for that reason, they thought if they kind of bundled it into this overall bill, they could get enough people on board and get the simple majority and defund Planned Parenthood through this other effort.
If the parliamentarian sees it a different way other than this recommendation suggests, can it pass the Senate with Planned Parenthood's money, federal money, taken away?
You know, I'm not sure. I mean, let's leave aside just for a second, theoretically speaking, all of the other disagreements that many senators have with other parts of the bill. But I think it's tough even with just the defunding issue on its own, because you already have two Republican senators, Lisa Murkowski from Alaska and Susan Collins from Maine, both of whom are vehemently opposed to defunding Planned Parenthood. They've said already that they plan to introduce an amendment to take that clause out of the bill if it ever comes to the point where that's, you know, the last issue they have with it. They'd plan to strip that out of the bill. And so then you're already down to 50 senators voting in favor of that provision. So I think it's kind of tough to see how that would work out logistically unless some other kind of compromise was brokered.
Is there any possibility of getting any votes from the Democratic side of the Senate on this thing?
I mean, maybe if we had a totally different Democratic Party, it would be possible, but I don't think there's a single Democratic senator who would vote for defunding Planned Parenthood. There are a couple who would say they're pro-life personally or have relatively pro-life voting records, but defunding Planned Parenthood is a very, very unpopular stance to take in the Senate.
Why is that? Why would otherwise pro-life or at least sympathetic senators balk at taking away federal funding for abortion?
You know, I think that a lot of people buy into this sort of media rhetoric that Planned Parenthood's been spinning for decades now. And, you know, they claim that the Hyde Amendment means that no money can go to abortion, which completely ignores the fact that money's fungible. So any money going to Planned Parenthood or to a group that performs abortion is necessarily money going toward abortion. And I think they also buy into the idea that Planned Parenthood is out there providing millions and millions of women with valuable health care that they couldn't get anywhere else. And I think that's just largely untrue. There are a lot of federally qualified healthcare centers all across the country that vastly outnumber Planned Parenthood and that provide many, many more crucial healthcare services. But Democrats and just sort of the media, popular culture at large, I think, really believe that Planned Parenthood is providing these valuable services that particularly low-income women can't get elsewhere. And so they are able to demonize people who would vote to take that away.
Finally, then, how much of this, at least from the Democratic side, in your opinion, is simply not wanting to give President Trump this kind of a victory so early in his presidency?
You know, I think a lot of it definitely comes down to that. Democrats are certainly, they see every week that they put off a vote as a victory in itself, because it's another week that the Senate isn't getting anything done. Nothing else on President Trump's agenda is happening. And his, you know, so-called big ticket item, as he would say, also isn't being accomplished. So I'm sure that plays into it as well.
I guess one more question occurs to me, and that is, for those who are looking to say what's holding things up, obviously the big portion of the blame goes to the Democratic opponents of this, but is there blame also, as you mentioned before, to go around among the Republican members of the Senate?
You know, I think there's plenty, and I wrote a column last week just saying enough of the pointing fingers. Everybody bears some blame in this problem, and you know, looking for scapegoats isn't the answer, because you could certainly say that conservative senators are perhaps being too stubborn, looking to get everything that they want, not willing to compromise. But you could say the same thing about the moderate Republican senators who are basically unwilling to touch anything that would cause any of their constituents to lose health insurance that they gained under Obamacare. So I think everybody's really, everyone's trying to get the whole pie and really not trying to move the process forward at all.
Alexander DeSantis is William F. Buckley Fellow in Political Journalism for the National Review Institute. She's author of a recent column for National Review Online titled Senate Healthcare Bill Won't Defund Planned Parenthood. You can read it at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Alexandra, thank you.
Thank you, John.
When we come back, it's part two of our series on the Book of Hebrews with Dr. John Kleinig, author of the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July, the Concordia Commentary on Hebrews.
If you're like me, you remember when education was about the basic skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic, and about reading great literature and history that gave our kids models of what it is to be a good person. Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum is bringing this kind of education back. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Christians should operate fully in the public square, and that includes by engaging with the media.
Molly Hemingway talking about her joint presentation at the 2017 Fall Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference.
And one of the things that they can do is encourage reporters to report things accurately and truthfully. They can express their opinions in letters to the editor and op-eds. And one of the things that's important is to just let people in the world know of the differences of opinion that are out there, that Christians don't share a lot of the secular thinking that is promulgated by the media. And so being bold and being able to stand up and simply speak truth in the public square, it's a powerful witness to others, and it's a service you can perform for your community and the country at large.
You can meet and hear Molly and Mark Hemingway making the case for Christians engaging the news media at our Fall Making the Case Conference, November 10th and 11th in Houston, Texas. Learn more at issuesetc.org.